Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share this time with you because our intent is to understand how we can live a longer and healthier life. Today, we're beginning with the University of Paulo in Spain about quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And why is that important? Because that supports post-exercise muscle recovery. Now, we have a lot of people who are doing a lot of exercise, which is good. But the older you get, the longer it takes to recover after exercise. So if you could take quercetin, let's say 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams after you exercise, that can speed up your recovery and make you more likely to be fully recovered by the time you exercise again. A systematic review of what is known as a meta-analysis, that means they're looking at several different studies and trying to see what do they have in common. It's published in the current issue of Biology of Sports, and it concludes that supplementing with a plant compound, quercetin, onions and apples, that's where you get your quercetin, speeds muscle function, recovery, and reduces muscle soreness following exercise. And this was based upon examining 13 different studies, and they were suggesting 1,000 milligrams a day. I suggest double that. Now, from the Icahn School of Medicine, could cacao, which is chocolate, and you can get healthy organic chocolate or unhealthy chocolate with lots of sugar and dairy. You don't want that. But organic healthy chocolate, around 70%, according to this, that can help prevent Alzheimer's. A research team led by a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine found that a cacao extract called Lavado, L-A-V-A-D-O, may reduce or block damage to nerve pathways found in patients with Alzheimer's disease. This means that symptoms of the condition, such as cognitive decline, could be prevented. That's a big deal. Why? Because cacao has a high level of what are called polyphenols, and these are antioxidants, and they're found in fruits and vegetables. And a polyphenol-rich diet, including grapes, reduces the risk of dementia, and Alzheimer's is one form of dementia. So 2 ounces a day, that's about a little square of chocolate, would be terrific for you. All right? Now, another study, and this study is talking about consuming vegetable oil that you buy out of a supermarket leads to an unhealthy gut. And this is the University of California. Now, which kind of oils are not good? Any that are clear. If they're clear, it means all their important nutrients and antioxidants have been removed, clarified. You don't want that. Soy oil, that would be a bad one. Canola oil, another bad one. So if you're consuming soybean oil, which a lot of people do, it can be linked to obesity and diabetes and even potentially autism and Alzheimer's free anxiety and depression can occur when you're eating a healthy diet, living a healthy life. But we eat a lot of oil, and almost all the oil we eat is unhealthy. So if you don't want depression, if you want an anxiety, Alzheimer's, obesity and diabetes, and ulcerative colitis, which is a form of inflammatory bowel disease. This is all due to chronic inflammation. And what causes chronic inflammation? Heated oils. Did you ever notice in some of these chef shows, they turn the heat up and so everything's flaming? Well, that might look cool, but it's bad for the food. It alters the proteins, destroys the antioxidants. It denatures the food itself. And that's why you should only cook with coconut oil, mustard seed oil, and macadamia nut oil. Those are the healthy oils because they resist high heat. And also cook even with those oils at a lower temperature. So anyhow, if you do those oils, flaxseed oil, avocado oil, walnut oil, almond oil, and they're organic and they're fresh pressed, then you're getting beneficial bacteria in the gut and eliminating a lot of the harmful bacteria. So stay away from all the oils you would eat in almost all the fast food restaurants, because they're all bad. It's all about what is known as linoleic acid, L-I-N-O-L-E-I-C, in soybean oil. That's the big concern, because that's extremely pro-inflammatory, and you don't want anything causing inflammation in your diet. And also, according to the best science, olive oil is your best oil. But make sure you're getting it from a qualified source. And to know if it's qualified, write a letter asking for certification of the lab test that shows that it's actually 100% extra virgin organic olive oil. If they don't send it to you, that's a red flag. They should. And also from the Environmental Health Trust, chronic cell phone use hinders your infant's development. The two most important community mechanisms a newborn innate needs, a baby. We think cell phones are safe because they're not really regulated. If there was a problem, surely the FDA, the government, U.S. Public Health Service, someone would raise our concern. But there isn't. Go ahead and use your cell phone all you want. You know, kids sleep with them. Teenagers, college kids sleep with a cell phone on under their pillow, and frequently their tablet as well, pulsing electromagnetic frequencies right into the brain, right through the skull. So what could possibly go wrong? Well, according to Environmental Health Trust, chronic cell phone use hinders your infant's development. The two most important communicative mechanisms a newborn innately has to navigate his world or her world are eye, gaze, and crying. From birth, newborns are constantly developing speech, language, and communication skills with every response they command from their caregiver. As early as 5 days old, very early on, newborns and infants develop a pre-linguistic skills, eye gaze. You've all seen it. They just kind of stare at you, and it's cute. Well, this eye gaze is signaling a cue for communication and joint attention, and the ability of an infant to rest his or her gaze on an object at the same time the caregiver is looking at the same object. It is speculated that eye gaze between baby and mother is one of the most important pre-linguistic skills to occur before verbal communication develops. However, excessive cell phone usage can work to hinder the communicative rhythm and bonding experience that newborn mothers and infants work to establish, especially within the first 6 months. As it's so important for newborn babies and their mothers to pay attention to different cries, constant distraction from a cell phone can alter the way the other perceives the cry, thus making it more difficult to decode. Infants are so intuitive early on that even the slightest delay in response to a cry or a cough can alter the way they perceive their world. Additionally, if a mother is pursuing high emotional content that is so pertinent in Facebook and social media, the overflow of emotion may inadequately color her response to the infant. Many mothers use the cell phone to pass the time of day during the long nurse feeding and sessions with the early infancy. However, infants are highly communicative during feeding, and texting and social media when supposed to be breastfeeding can distract a mother from the needs of the infant. And chronic cell phone usage, such as texting and social media usage, could absolutely hinder infant development as a result of missed cues on the part of the mother. The early months of a newborn who continuously has to wait for the mother while looking at the cell phone before responding to cry, initiation for communication with other cues, the brain's connections will actually reorganize around this delay, later dampening the development of instinctual communication between mother and infant. If you're ever around animals who have babies, and I am every day, and is, you know, having overseeing an animal rescue sanctuary, you notice that the mothers with her new babies, constantly communicating, constantly attentive, perfect mothering. There are some exceptions, but, well, especially with the primates, you know, that mother's watching the baby, it starts to go off, it pulls it back, and it gets into the play with it, and the hugging, the bonding, the kissing, all day long. And therefore, you don't have the babies growing up feeling rejected, and they're happy. Another study, and this is from the Federal University of São Paulo in Brazil, suggests that resistance training can prevent or delay Alzheimer's disease. So the takeaway message is simple. Regular physical exercise, such as resistance training, can prevent dementia, and a form of dementia is Alzheimer's. And it can delay the appearance of symptoms and serves as a simple, affordable, non-medical approach to this. And this was published in Frontiers Neuroscience. So do your push-ups against a wall. Just put your hands up, lean into the wall, and push back. Lean into the wall, and push back. In a gym, the more resistance training you do, the better it is for you. So once again, exercise. The older you get, the more you need it. It's neuroprotective. And this latest study shows that. And finally, from Harvard School of Public Health, alpha-linolenic acid is associated with lower multiple sclerosis risk. According to this report from Boston, a plant-based omega-3 fatty acid, ALA, just look at the initials on your vitamin supplement or your bottle. It should say ALA. That's alpha-linolenic acid. Now, that's not the same as linolenic acid. They almost seem the same. You have to look at the end of the word to see that they're not spelled the same. But if you have that, which means the omega-3 fatty acids twice a day, then you're lowering your risk of multiple sclerosis. And it's also good to take if you have multiple sclerosis. But there's a unique protocol for just multiple sclerosis. And of course, that's just one part of it. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And remember, just in a couple days, on the Sunday, this coming Sunday at 1 o'clock, I'll be having the worldwide premiere of my newest documentary, Manufacturing Madness. And if you go up to GaryNoll.com, you can see the trailer, 4-minute trailer. Watch the trailer. You'll see how powerful it is. And the film is 2 hours and 6 minutes long. The webinar will start at 1 o'clock. It'll go until 3 o'clock. The full film, questions and answers, will be addressed. Everyone should watch this, because everyone, sooner or later, will have bouts of anxiety, loneliness, depression, angst, just existential angst. You don't know what's the problem, but you feel it. You feel something's wrong. And I try to address all of this in this film with some of the world's leading authorities on mental health, and lots of positive information also. Got some really good people in here. It took a long time for me to film this. One of the longest documentaries in time, about almost 6 years. So, one time showing for the public this coming Sunday. And you can go to GaryNoll.com, and it'll show you how to sign up for yourself, where you can contact our regular number. All right? We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot of issues that we need to deal with, but we need to deal with them with some maturity. We need to have a better understanding of the full context of our problems, whether it's global warming, and what parts of global warming, what about environmental disasters, and are we capable of understanding we may be living in the wrong place today, though it was a great place to live up until this point. With all the different environmental catastrophes that are happening, the hottest day in recorded history just happened yesterday. People are dying. We're creating environmental refugees. They simply can no longer live where they have been living. Are we looking at this from what is the problem, what is the solution? Well, to do that, we have to have people who have an awareness, a larger cognition awareness of the world they live in, a sense of history, civics, cultural differentiations, what makes us unique individually and what makes us special collectively. And for those of us who have been a part of this movement our entire lives, working at conciliation, cooperation, growth, acknowledging the mistakes made historically, but also realizing that we're not living 200 years ago. We're living today. And we've learned a lot in that 200 years. And even today, we're learning. Think of how much we've been forced to grow just in the last 10 years. Not everything that we're presented with is positive. A lot of it's very negative. We have distempered individuals who think that yelling and screaming and cursing and demeaning and erasing a person is the right approach to anything that offends them. Now, mind you, these people have contributed nothing to the world that is hopeful yet to come. And we're just going to give an example of some. This was random. These people, and all told, it's a long clip, but I'm only going to play a tiny little piece of it. They were asked some questions. Now, normally, these questions could only be answered by Albert Schweitzer or Albert Einstein or René Dubos. I mean, you have to be a genius to answer these questions. You think it's not tough? This is UCLA at Berkeley, the campus. These are the students trying to answer three questions. And not one person, not just in the short clip, but in all the clip. I watched the whole clip, not one person got one question right. And these are the people going into industry and government. We're going to be taking on from those of us who are retiring or are retired, many people, and going to run the world? Really? Take a look.
2 times 2 times 1.
2?
Which ocean is on the east side of the United States?
The east one?
Yeah. You're from New York, right?
Yeah. Oh, Pacific?
You guys know this.
I know this. I don't know this.
Pacific? No, I can't do the oceans. I don't do the oceans. Pacific.
What is the capital of the United States?
Sob! I knew he was going to embarrass us.
I know, D. Wait. I didn't want to think because I don't want to sound dumb.
Well, just...
There's no capital of the United States.
Yeah, literally.
States. Is there no capital?
Correct.
Was that right?
No.
Oh!
You guys are UCLA students?
We literally go to UCLA. Yeah.
What are the three Kardashian sisters' names?
Kourtney, Kim, and Khloe.
Khloe, Kim.
Kourtney.
And Kourtney.
Yeah.
Bonus points for the brother?
Robert.
What?
Rob.
What do you think? And by the way, there's at least 100 other such films done by different people, nothing planned, nothing staged, where they simply go up to people and ask them basic questions, simple question. 2 times 2 plus 1, that's 5. And none of them could answer that. So what are they going to be able to understand about the world, about conflicts, about stopping what is occurring in Yemen and helping to go in there and rebuild the country and helping the Haiti that is now a lawless country? I have a lot of connections in Haiti. I try to help the Haitian people and have. And now it's just out of control. Who caused that? We did. The French and the Americans did. Well, what if you don't understand that history? How can you solve a problem if you don't understand the context of the problem? You can't. So now we have a whole different way of looking at problems, and they're not positive. But there is someone who is looking at the problems. I'm going to show you a clip now. And this is really unusual. I showed you a clip of this person a year ago. He was a member of parliament in Great Britain, and he was speaking out about the research of respected scientists around the world who had no controversy in their background at all pro-vaccine. And yet he's saying the information that we now have on these vaccines and protocols is damning. And he cited the actual scientific study. For that, he was booted. He was booed. In fact, there was no one in the chamber. There's one shot. He's talking to an empty chamber. Nobody wanted to be associated with him. Well, guess what? He was right. So guess where he is now in this video? Just taken. You haven't seen it before. European Union. the Parliament of the European Union, representing all 27 countries and their delegates from these 27 countries. Guess what they're doing? They're giving him a standing ovation. Now, you don't get invited to the European Union unless you have something significant to say. And he's talking about the World Health Organization, corrupt as it is, vile as it is, totally controlled by Bill Gates and special interests, as it is in the Chinese government. The two largest contributors for the three would be Bill Gates, the Chinese government, and the United States, all complicit. And we know how corrupt. I've written an article. Go to GaryNall.com and scroll down and read my article on the World Health Organization and how vile and corrupt a criminal organization it is. Now, they want to have a treaty signed by all the countries of the world that usurps all sovereign authority. So they'll say if we have a new pandemic, what you should do, punishment if you don't obey, which vaccines you're going to have to take, also genetically engineered vaccines, because it's opened up a door. Now no one's saying how dangerous, how lethal this vaccine is, which it is. And they're going to control everything. Everything. You'll have no control. So he's saying, don't pass this. Reject it. No, it's tyranny. And he is correct. But no media in America, except right here, will show you this. So you'll know the truth. Now to this clip of this very courageous parliamentarian speaking truth to the power of the World Health Organization before the European Union.
Shoulder to shoulder on an issue of the most importance in our lives and those of our children. So I didn't expect to be here, but I think we can all say that over the last 3 years, a lot of things have happened in our lives that we didn't expect to happen. So desperate times lead to desperate measures. And my main point, the main point I want to make in my address to you today in the time that I've got available is that, and I want you to hear loud and clear, that the very concept of the democracy that we've taken for granted all of our lives is under threat as it never has been before. And it's not just in my country, it's not across Europe, it is across the whole of the world. It's not from external armies mounding up on our borders this time, but it is from the corruption and the decay of our own institutions who are allowing this to happen. I think every one of us who's elected and represents our people, we need to remember that we always the servants of the people. We are not their masters. And some of my colleagues and some elected representatives around the world have forgotten this lesson. They will need to learn this lesson again. We are entrusted to represent our constituents and their best interests at all times. And when their rights are threatened, we are duty bound to defend them. Again, many of my colleagues seem to have forgotten that. And the turnout even for the WHO debate in our parliament was very, very disappointing. So, the global pandemic treaty is such a threat to our sovereignty, looming ominously on the horizon, together with the amendments to the international health regulations, which will fundamentally, if they're passed through our parliaments, alter the relationship between the citizens and the state. The WHO would paint an illusion of nation states coming together to fight deadly pathogens, when it's really, as we've already heard, a power grab by an unaccountable elite, rather keen to reinforce the power shift that has already happened in the global pandemic response to COVID-19. The recommendations made during COVID-19 by the WHO were advisory, and they now want them to become mandatory. I mean, let's face it, the WHO did not exactly cover themselves with glory with their recommendations during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was a litany of disaster, a disaster which the WHO were not even keen to look into. They've had no review of their performance and their recommendations during the recent COVID-19 pandemic. So confident are they that their ideas and their advice was absolutely perfect. So there can be no doubt that if we fail to learn the mistakes of history, certainly that as far as the WHO are concerned, they are doomed to repeat them. So the World Health Organization is an unelected, diplomatically immune, tax-exempt group that bears no resemblance to the good faith Florence Nightingale Union of Nations set up over 75 years ago. Public health and the decisions surrounding it now exist as a monopoly of the WHO, headed up by bureaucrats in Geneva, whose leadership has been embroiled in scandal after scandal. And the majority of the influence on the WHO now is by external entities. And indeed, as has been mentioned, one of the richest men in the world has a massive influence over the WHO. Indeed, I think 84% of all the funding of the WHO now is by external commercial sources, with an ability to direct the area that your generous donations to the WHO will send their policies. So it's basically pay to play. If you have enough money, you can influence the WHO. Not exactly the people I'd like to be deciding in the future whether my constituents are locked into their houses, whether they can see their relatives, if they have to wear masks, and if they have to take mandatory medication. I would say the least qualified people in the world to make those decisions. And any parliament that decides to abdicate its responsibilities to its constituents does not deserve the name of being a parliament and does not deserve a seat in any elected assembly. We have no right to relinquish our sovereignty, the sovereignty of our nations, because it's not mine to give away. It's not any of us to give away. Sovereignty always belongs to the people, and every election should be returned back to the people, where they will again decide who they allow to represent them for the next parliamentary period. Forests can be grown for 1,000 years, but could be chopped down in a few weeks, and the same is with our democracy. I've actually been shocked, and I think people in the UK have come to take our democracy and freedoms as a right, an entitlement, that's something that would never be taken away. But I'm equally shocked that those in Europe who have suffered under tyranny in living memory would, again, perhaps acquiesce to that position again without resistance. So I don't think I'm being dramatic when I say that the Global Pandemic Treaty and the amendments to the International Health Regulations will allow the WHO to declare a public health emergency of international concern, a FAKE, abbreviated to, and not only when to call it, but how long it would last and when it would be over. And I suspect that it would be a very long time before we had democracy returned to our independent parliaments. I call on every elected representative around the world to resist these WHO power grabs. It would be a dereliction of our democratic duty that we have to our electorates. There's no way that we should be signing away sovereignty without the agreement of the people, and that would take a referendum in each country to hand over those sort of powers, and I would settle for nothing less. I will end with a quote from America, which I think, since we've had Dr. McCullough on, I think is quite apt. It said that when the people are scared of the politicians, that is tyranny. But when the politicians are scared of the people, that's democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to get to the latter, and we need to get there quickly. We're in dangerous times.
Sometimes we just need a dose of common sense to make better insight into our conflicts. There's a man named Oliver. He's Scottish. He's a historian. And he does a lot of these extemporaneous conversations every day. We're going to play you his latest one and see how much common sense he's laying out about why do they want to control us? Why do they demand to control us? Why do the people that we elected who are supposed to be serving our interests now say that they don't have to listen to anything we're saying, and they don't, and they want more control over our lives? He's telling you where all this is going. World Economic Forum, Business Roundtable, UN, all these groups are working together. He lays his finger on it, and he's one of the most respected commentary presenters in the world. Now to Neil Oliver.
I make a point nowadays of thinking the unthinkable on the grounds that it's part of how we'll win. When I look ahead into the proposed future, or should that be the future threatened by those who would cast our best interests into a bin fire along with our health and our rights, when I contemplate that digital, net zero, 15-minute ghetto, cashless, fake food future, that all-round rubbish future, let me tell you, it's not just hard to see a happy ending for ordinary people like you and me. I say it's every bit as impossible to see how the nonsense can work out well, even for those seeking to impose that dire future. And I think that's why they've lost already, whether they know it or not. 17th century English poet John Donne said, "Any man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind." I think about that line and remember we're all connected, whether we want to be or not. And I remember that whatever happens to some might eventually happen to all, from richest to poorest. What's going on around us now is compelled change, forced change none of us asked for, and on a global scale. For the first time, a tiny dominant group thinks it can change and certainly has the technology to change, to quote the title of the Oscar-winning movie, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And for the first time, it's not change for the better, but deliberate change for the worse, at least worse for the vast majority of people. To seek to make life worse for almost everyone, without everyone's consent, is a bold move, to be sure. It's also a move doomed to failure. Its architects are clever, but a vintage of clever I like to describe precisely as stupid clever. I've read it estimated that no more than 8,000 individuals count themselves among the significant clique making all the decisions. There are almost 8 billion people alive on Earth, which means we outnumber that clique by 1,000,000 to 1. Based on that alone, I say we can get the better of them. I would say it's also foolhardy for anyone, however rich, powerful and clever they might consider themselves to be, to think they can change everything for everyone while at the same time correctly predicting all of the consequences of their actions, and all the while being outnumbered by 999,999 folk disinclined to agree with them. There are many people, we all know them, who refuse to see the future that's being planned for them and steadily set in place, having been duped all their lives. And let me tell you, I know that feeling. The very notion of accepting they've been duped is too much for them, too painful, too frightening. Instead, they prefer to be angry with those who've been brave enough to accept they've been had and to talk freely about it. But the good news is, it doesn't take the billions to overturn the nonsense. As has happened more than once in history, it's the few who will make all the difference for all the rest by the simple acts of defiance and saying no. As they keep telling us, it's all one planet that we share, one big old house. And as it says in the old book, he that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. When the national borders are all gone, when everyone belongs anywhere and therefore nowhere, when the farmers who grow all the food have been driven off and transnational cartels find other uses for the land, when there's only fake meat, powdered bugs and genetically modified, patented and trademarked plants to eat, when coal, oil and gas are banned with nothing practical to replace them, when finally too many people have nothing at all in their 15-minute ghettos and are murderously unhappy, what then? I look at the shameful, embarrassing state of politics and wonder which of the hapless, hopeless so-called leaders might be left standing when the music stops. And I know that the many answers that people will demand absolutely cannot and will not come from those sock puppets. I look at Scotland, where the former First Minister was taken into custody for questioning in relation to a crime, while in Westminster, the former Prime Minister, the last one actually voted into power by the people 4 summers and 1,000 years ago, has been reduced to writing a newspaper column about his struggle to shed his fat gut. Oh, the irony. Johnson's first column is written to publicise the most expensive big pharma product in the world. Is anyone else seeing the transparency of this? And all around them on sinking ships, their fellow rats ignore the plight of millions in favour of scrapping among themselves. When will anyone in Westminster get the point that no one in their right mind gives a flying fig about cake and parties? The elephant in the room is that politicians, civil servants and scientific advisers evidently knew COVID was nothing to fear. The point is not who ate cake and when and did or did not tell the truth about it. The point is that they flouted rules and partied while people died lonely deaths, denied even the comfort of family. The point is that rather than face up to a single one of the appalling harms and economic disaster they orchestrated, they seek to distract us from the patently obvious by point scoring of the pettiest sort. Then, across the pond, the sitting president of the land of the free is moving heaven and earth to jail his strongest political opponent. Think about that. What's always been the way of tin pot dictators in banana republics is now the go-to tactic for the leader of the free world. Does anyone believe anymore that any of those jokers are actually in charge? I lie in bed at night and think about various scenarios, any one of which might describe our collective future. While none of those are appealing in any way, at least not to an ordinary Joe like me, I also fail to see which of the possible futures would suit the predatory, billionaire, philanthropath class either. While the misery unfolds, the misery made inevitable by Agenda 2030 and net zero and by centralised control of food supply and cash replaced by digital tokens and no way to heat homes in cold climates or to keep homes cool in hot climates and no private transport and no private property and endless wars. While all that's going on, do the obscenely rich plan to hide behind the 20-foot-high walls of luxury compounds? Oases of calm protected by private armies in remote areas beyond the reach of a general population denied every mode of transport apart from walking and cycling. Can they really get far enough away from us? Can they ever feel safe enough? Will they eat choice cuts of meat and drink fine wines while the masses are confined at home and chowing down on crickets and locusts? Will their factories keep churning out the mRNA vaccines for monthly top-ups of the pincushion plebs to maintain the validity of those digital IDs? And supposing any and all of that happens and the unavoidable consequences play out, what then? If World War III really does break out, and on account of all the present provocation by the West in the face of Russia and China, such a cataclysm feels closer than at any time since World War II, and when the crop of mushroom clouds spreads across the continents, what then? When the necessary years pass and the radioactive dust settles, and the day comes when it's deemed safe for those philanthropaths and their assorted young to emerge blinking from their bunkers under the compounds into a strangely quiet world, what then? Will those rich, those we might call a cacistocracy, which is to say government by the worst of us, the least competent, will those rich continue to fly in their private jets between airstrips, presumably heavily defended airstrips provided with illicit supplies of aviation fuel, and to sail the empty seas on their vast private yachts powered by illicit diesel? Those billionaire technocrats might know how to contemplate the design of rocket ships to Mars and whatever it is that goes into a brain chip capable of letting a quadriplegic person dance the tango, and who understand the theory behind growing a sirloin steak in a 3D printer. But who's going to unblock their toilets for them, fix the wiring in their luxury homes, sort out their recycling and dispose of their trash? Who's going to mine the lithium and cobalt for their batteries? Who will they boss around then? Who will they lord it over and feel superior to? Presumably those richest and most powerful men and women of a certain age are planning a future that must come to fruition only after they're dead. Supposing, that is, they haven't been so silly as to upload digitised versions of their consciousnesses into the cloud in hopes of being downloaded later into synthetic bodies. I say silly because imagine how tempting it would be for some minion, some flunky entrusted with the care of that digital soul, simply to press delete instead. Imagine as well how a file like that might become corrupted or just lost like any other. If it's the case instead that they are shaping the future for their children and grandchildren, then what kind of world might that be? Will their offspring be as ruthless and as contemptuous of their fellow human beings? Will they look around at a world changed beyond all recognition and be happy? Sometimes I ask myself different questions and contemplate other scenarios. Will those philanthropaths turn on each other before they even finish the job of dealing with us? If they're as intolerant of us as they seem to be, how long before they see their closest competition for resources as an unbearable threat as well? I say it won't work and it won't happen, because I tell you now that when it comes to the wet work, none of the clowns closest to power have the cojones, and the faceless, nameless people in the background are too scared to be exposed, and this would expose them. Our pretend leaders don't have the nerve, certainly not the resolve required to be standing there in the public gaze when the music stops. The unintended consequences will kick them in the bahuki if they think they can undermine and set aside the human need for family, real food and a meaningful future, and that that won't impact on them. Then they truly are the anti-human cacistocracy I've long expected them of being. Here's the thing. In the end, what will save us is the natural law, which favours right over wrong and good actions over bad. There's nothing more natural and right than a man and woman coming together to make a family and a home for children. The unintended consequence of denying millions of men and women that right will sweep the bad actors from the stage like a tsunami. The natural human instinct to nurture is stronger than any technology they might attempt to enslave us with. The good and right and natural way of things will prevail, because the universe wants things that way.
Just some words from a person who thinks deeply. If you found any of his comments of value, good. That's what they're for. By the way, we had a little technical glitch earlier in the program, which sometimes happens. And what you got to hear was they couldn't answer a single question. Not a single student interviewed could answer any of the questions. But when asked, do they know about the Kardashians and their names? Of course, they knew all that. And we're going to play the clip to show you how much they don't know.
2 × 2 × 1.
2?
Which ocean is on the east side of the United States?
The east one?
Yeah. You're from New York, right?
Yeah. Oh, Pacific?
You guys know this.
I know this. I don't know this. Pacific? No, I can't do the oceans. I don't do the Pacific.
What is the capital of the United States?
Stop! I knew he was gonna embarrass us.
I know, wait. I didn't want to think because I don't want to sound dumb.
Well, just
there's no capital of the United States.
Yeah, literally.
States. Is there no capital?
Correct.
Was that right?
No.
Oh,
you guys are UCLA students.
We literally go to UCLA. It's, yeah.
What are the three Kardashian sisters' names?
Kourtney, Kim, and Khloe.
Khloe, Kim,
Kourtney, and Kourtney.
Yeah.
Bonus points for...
Okay, there was another question. What country is the Queen of England from? Nobody can answer it. But there were dozens of other questions, and I didn't see a single student who could answer a single question. So just put this in perspective. Those weren't selected because they were making wrong answers and all the people who made correct answers were left out. No, that's what goes on. And that's unfortunate, because our world is more than knowing the names or the fashions of the latest pop stars or the Kardashians. For example, if I ask any of the students at these universities, tell me the background of the Ukrainian war with Russia. Who started it? Russia. No, they did not. No, that was the Secretary of State and George Bush Sr. who started it, based upon the lie that they gave Gorbachev. Dismantle the Soviet Union and all of its satellite states like Georgia, Ukraine, and NATO will go no further east towards Russia. And Gorbachev trusted them. Then they lied. And they've been pushing more towards Russia ever since. NATO is a criminal organization. It should not exist. Should not. Completely criminal. Just like the World Health Organization should not exist. The FBI should not exist. The CIA should not exist. We don't need 17 different intelligence agencies. One's enough. They're all corrupt. No, we shouldn't have the judicial system we have. It's utterly corrupt. We should reform everything. But you can't reform anything because those in power refuse to accept responsibility. The FDA, in its entire history, has been nothing but a platform to protect the interests of those whose drugs and vaccines they want to promote Interesting, I did a 10-year study of the FDA, and 50% of all the drugs that were banned had been FDA approved and were not taken off the market. In fact, the FDA did not tell the manufacturer, Merck, to discontinue the use immediately and withdraw all product of the biggest killing drug in American history, Vioxx, the COX-2 inhibiting drug for people who had pain. I went around the country interviewing people. One of the people I interviewed was a professor of medicine at the University of Chicago, and he was retired because he had had repeated heart attacks and strokes, couldn't teach, could barely speak. We put him in the film, and I asked him, you're the professor that has a classroom full of young medical students. They're going to first respect you because you're the authority figure. You're going to respect the curriculum. Who creates the curriculum? And without hesitating, he said, Big Pharma. And the AMA shouldn't exist at all. And in fact, I was responsible for one of the lawsuits that helped show the truth. They were found guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade, and it saved the entire profession of chiropractic. Go back and read the articles. In any case, we don't know anything about anything today. If we're young, many young people do. Many young people have parents who care about civics and cultures and history and share that with them. Many are still privileged to have honest school teachers. We have a lot of honest teachers. Teachers are underappreciated. It's the system they're in that's utterly corrupt and cannot be changed. So therefore, homeschooling, that's a big plus. Especially now, you don't have to do the homeschooling all yourself, because there are a lot of teachers that were forced out because they refused to get the vaccination. Smart them. And now, one teacher on a Zoom can work with homeschooled children and families all together, all over the country. And also, the charter schools are also good, and especially for the poor population. But who's going to tell the young people the truth about anything when they cannot spend the time looking at you or reading or doing scholarship? They're distracted. This is from Lindsay Snell and Corey Pop from the Gray Zone. These are people willing to tell the truth. Now, think of it this way. Why would you take some of the most popular and accurate and non-compromisable journalists, all liberals? Now, let's just say when you start with Matt Taibbi and Schoenberg and Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, and you start going down at least 30 of these people, and not one of them is invited on any liberal show today. Unless it's a real liberal show and not a corporate liberal show, because they're telling the truth. Why should you fear the truth? Because what if you've embraced the benefits of the lie? This is what they have to say, and this is why I'm doing this. This is about Ukraine. And here's what's not being told. We have showed you the videos of Ukrainian soldiers killing Russians who were bound. That's a war crime. Nothing happened to them. And they're bragging about it. You can see their faces, so we know who they are. They didn't have to worry because American media would never show those photos. Embalming villages that they were supposed to be protecting. This is what they found when they went into the war zone. Quote, this is the title of the article. This is on Gray Zone. Ukraine war veterans on how Kyiv plundered U.S. aid, wasted soldiers, endangered civilians, and lost the war. Quote, the weapons are stolen. Humanitarian aid is stolen. And we have no idea where the billions of this country have gone, end quote. In a video sent via Facebook Messenger, Ivan can be seen standing next to his car, an early 2010 model Mitsubishi SUV. Smoke is pouring out the rear window. Ivan laughs and pans his phone camera across the length of the vehicle, pointing out bullet holes. The turbocharger died in my car, and he panned his phone to the front of the vehicle. My commander said I should pay to repair it myself. So to use my own car in the war, I need to buy a new turbocharger with my own money. End quote. Ivan flipped the camera towards his face, quote, "Well, you effing mother effing members of parliament, I hope you eff each other. Devils, I wish you were in our place," end quote. Last month, Ukraine's parliamentarians voted to give themselves a 70% salary increase. Filings indicate the raise was enabled and encouraged by billions of dollars and euros of aid that have poured in from the United States and Europe. Quote, "We, the Ukrainian soldiers, we have nothing. The things the soldiers have been given to use in the war came directly from volunteers. The aid that goes to our government will never reach us," end quote. Ivan has been a soldier since 2014. Currently, he's stationed in the Donbass region, where he is tasked with using small consumer-grade drones to spot Russian positions for artillery targeting. Quote, "There's so many problems on the front line now. We don't have an internet connection, which makes our work basically impossible. We have to drive to a connection on a mobile phone. Can you imagine?" Another soldier in Ivan's unit sent us a video of himself from a trench near the front lines in Donbass. Quote, "According to the documents, the government has built us a bunker here. But as you see, there are only a few centimeters of wood covering over our heads. And this is supposed to protect us from tank and artillery shelling. The Russians shell us for hours at a time. We dug these trenches ourselves. We have two AK-47s between five soldiers, and they jam constantly due to all the dust. I went to my commander and I explained the situation. I told him it's too hard to hold this position. I told him I understand this is a strategically important point, but our squad is broken and no relief is coming for us. In 10 days, 15 soldiers have died, all from shelling and shrapnel. I asked the commander if we could bring some heavy equipment to build a better bunker, and he refused because he said the Russian shelling would damage the equipment. Does he not care that 15 of our soldiers have died here? If you tried to explain the situation Ukrainian soldiers are facing to an American soldier, they would think you're insane. Imagine telling an American soldier that you're using your own cars in the war and we're also responsible for paying for repairs and fuel. We're buying our own body armor and helmets. We don't have observation tools or cameras. So soldiers have to pop their heads out to see what's coming, which means in any moment, the rocket or tank can tear their heads off. Lilia, a 23-year-old soldier from Kiev, says that the unit, they're facing the same conditions as all of the other Ukrainian army are. And then it goes into everything is stolen in Ukraine, everything. And here's what it's saying, quote, "In Ukraine, people cheat each other even in war. I've watched the medical supplies donated to be us being taken away. The cars that drove us to our positions were stolen, and we have not been replaced with new soldiers in 3 months, though we should have been relieved three times by now. Everyone is lying." U.S. doctor described shocking corruption. Quote, "Samantha Morris, a doctor from Maine, went to Ukraine in May to help provide medical training for soldiers. Quote, the first time I crossed the border from Poland, I had to hide my medical supplies under the mattresses and diapers to prevent them from being stolen. The border guards on the Ukrainian side would just take things and tell you we need them for the war, but then they just steal the items and resell them. Honestly, if you don't hand-deliver donations to the intended recipients, the items will never reach them. More than a few other American medical professionals began to hold training courses in the mid-sized city. We drew up a contract with the governor and in the area, and they were going to provide us just with meals and lodging. And the lodging was just us sleeping in the same public university where we were training the other soldiers. In any case, I'll go on, I won't read the rest of the article. She says all the medical supplies were stolen, all the pain medication was stolen. They had literally no pain medication for all these soldiers who were wounded coming in. No medicines. Why? Because the military head of the hospital was stealing it and selling it. So ask yourself this. When was the last time a mainstream media asked the President of the United States, can you account for the $130 billion plus dollars United States plus other countries? You're talking about nearly $200 billion and none of it's accountable for. None of it. But we know that it's the most corrupt nation in Europe. And the answer is zero. They have done nothing. So ask an average young person, how would you deal with the situation? Would you continue to support that kind of war when it's a proxy war for America and Great Britain and France? Has nothing to do with rescuing the citizens of Ukraine? Just suggesting. So the next time someone decides to yell and scream about how they feel, why don't you say, I'm willing to pay for you to go to Libya and try to talk the people out of selling Africans in the open markets that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and their whole group at the State Department and White House, they created that. Now tell them to stop. It's not right. It offends you. See what happens to you. And then from there, go to Yemen. And why don't you talk to the mothers who've lost over 300,000 children to starvation because of the United States and Saudi Arabia? You want to be offended by something, be offended by something real. But they're not. They're clueless. And that's our program for today. Let me mention I do have a special for you. First of all, last opportunity for you to sign up for the world premiere of Manufacturing Madness. Go to GaryNall.com and you can watch the trailer so you get an idea of what you're going to be seeing. It is powerful. And if you'd like to join me at 1 o'clock on Sunday for a premiere of the movie and then a Q&A afterwards, it'll last about 3 hours, the whole thing. And so it's not going to be a long day. And it's $20 for senior citizens, $30 for regular people. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 1 o'clock Sunday. You won't want to miss it because there's not going to be any other public showings. Now, I also have a special for you for today through next, it'll be through Wednesday. And this is a Strengthen, Rejuvenate, and Transcend special. Here's what you're going to get. You're getting a 50% off discount. You're going to get one of the most important products in the marketplace. And if you doubt me, go in, watch the commercial on television where the guy's selling you the greens and the breads, the fruits and vegetable capsules, and three of them. And he says, look at all that you're getting here. Okay, how much are you getting? We know because I spent over $1,000 testing his product. And we sent him a letter and asked him to please be very careful when you're saying how many servings of vegetables. And yet the implication was, from my perspective, was that if you took those three capsules of fruits and vegetables, that you'd have all your servings in a day. That's not the case. But we went to the USDA and found out what is your official servings. And the high end, it's 5 servings. The low end, it's for the average American, about 2. So I created for the first time. This is the first time. One product that gives you 3 certified servings of fruits and vegetables in it is called Fruit and Vegetable Stuff. And in this product, you're getting 3 servings. And I know of no other product, none in America, that gives you this. And it is the best of the best. And you're getting such things as, you're getting a proprietary blend of mangoes and black currants and cantaloupes and watermelon and papaya and plums and green peas and zucchini and tomatoes and watercress and squash and pea fiber and blackberries. You're getting all that in every scoop. Now, if you have 2 scoops a day, which I recommend, you're getting 6 servings. 6 servings. That's more than the upper limit of what the USDA recommends. It doesn't get better than that. But then to help you in your journey towards health and healing, you're also getting a copy of the new book on juicing and also the protein. Now, a lot of protein, they don't have a lot in them. They just have a certain amount of amino acids. I wanted to give you the best protein there is. So you're getting hemp protein, rice protein, split pea protein, the branched-chain amino acids, green matcha tea, blueberry, spirulina, turmeric, garcinia, Cambodia extract, Satcha Inchi, resveratrol, cinnamon, digestive enzymes like pectinase, fungal amylase, fungal protease, acid, the acid state protease, 250 million probiotics per serving. That's what you're getting, and a delicious vanilla flavor. And you're getting a lot of protein, by the way. You're getting 22 grams per serving. That's what I start each day with. So you're getting fruit and vegetable stuff that's like nothing else. You're getting muscle stuff like no other muscle product. You're getting Rejuvenate Reducing book. You're getting Shopping and Cooking cookbook that has all the beautiful, I should say DVD, has all the great recipes in it. It shows you how to cook. And Biological Aging documentary, the award-winning documentary. You're getting all that to understand how to slow down the aging process, prevent disease, maximize your health. That's a tremendous premium. How do you get it? It's simple. You just make a phone call, and you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet. Go visit him Monday to Saturday, noon to 1 o'clock, and he'll be able to help you. But you really should watch the documentary on biological aging, because it tells you so much. It gives you examples. You see real people going through protocols and how it's helping them. So give a call to get this terrific special. It'll be good through next Wednesday. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet, noon to 8, Monday to Saturday, 646-926-5430. That's it for us today. I want to thank you all for listening, and we look forward to having more. I'm going to have some outstanding guests next week. I'm going to be presenting a brand new investigative journaling report, really important one, on Monday. And we have a lot to share. So we look forward to sharing with you. Have a nice day, everyone.